You could have been a supporter of any football team. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. You could have been following the champions of the Champions League. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me, and that's the town where I come from. In Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Ravens Weekly. That's right, we are back for today's Christmas special. My name is Matt Hall and I'm joined as ever by Josh Tindall, who looks really, really happy to be back on the airwaves. Josh, how are you doing?
Good, Matt, you?
Yes, very, very good. All the better for seeing you and for seeing our lovely microphone set up here and for being back on Ravens Weekly. It's been a very, very busy couple of weeks and we apologise that we haven't been with you. We've had quite a lot of questions as to what's been going on, but it has been an exceedingly busy time as we lead up to Christmas. And as you can imagine, with the recent news coming out about lots of new signings and various bits and bobs going on, Christmas events, etc., so on and so forth, we've been very, very busy bees over here. So
yeah, I was a listener, I'd rather see new signings than listen to our voice.
Well, I think that's a given, really, isn't it? But yeah, why not have the best of both worlds and listen to us talk about the new signings?
Yay!
he said enthusiastically as ever. But it's great to be back with you for what is going to be our last episode of 2023. Just let that sink in. 2023 is nearly gone. And that in itself is scary. 2024 is just around the corner. But actually, before that point, we've got three games of football and three big games of football to get through. And we're going to talk a bit more about those a bit later on. But where better to start? We've already mentioned it in the intro to this podcast. And that is our two new signings. Miles Weston joining last week. And I think, Josh, one of my favourite things about when Miles came in was just how he looked around the surroundings that he was in, and he was just taken away. A player of that experience speaks volumes of the club, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, most of the new signings do, to be fair, but yeah, I mean, Miles has been in the game for a long time. I think it's a good signing for us. He did all right on Saturday at Southend, one of his former clubs, and I know Andy's happy for him to be here, and it just gives us that extra strength in that position.
He came through the ranks at Charlton Athletic during the 2006-07 season when the Addicts were in the Premier League, and spells at Notts County, Brentford, Gillingham, Southend United, as you mentioned there, Josh, Wycombe Wanderers, Ebbsfleet United and Dagenham and Redbridge preceded his move to the Relocatum Community Stadium. However, as we covered off in his interview, which is available on YouTube, just type in Bromley FC for our official channel, he was born in Lewisham and has family who live very, very locally indeed. And he himself doesn't live too far out either. So it's an excellent move for all parties. And you mentioned there, Josh, his impact coming on Saturday away to one of his former clubs. He won promotion to League One with Southend United in his time there. Plenty of fond memories, and actually before the game lots of good feedback on him as a person from the Southend fans that I spoke to outside the ground. And it's great to see him come in and slot in the situation we were in, whereby we were under the cosh a little bit. He's not typically a wing back, but he kind of assumed that position after Josh Pasley went off on a yellow card, potentially walking a little tightrope there with another yellow potentially. And he came on and did a great job. My favourite bit was everyone's kind of obsessing over his age, which is he's 35 now. And we talk about his experience, but actually he is as fit as you like. He is as fit as they come. And I think there was one moment where he just skinned the left back, the Southend left back, and everyone sort of just gasped, and a couple of the people in the press box went, he's 35. Doesn't matter. As long as you're fit and you're active, it really doesn't matter. And he is still, he's still got pace to burn, hasn't he? And that's certainly one we look forward to seeing develop in a Bromley shirt. And like I said, if you'd like to get the in-depth reaction to his signing, you can head over to bromleyfc.co.uk or check out our YouTube channel where you'll be able to find the interview with Miles Weston, and a big warm Bromley FC welcome to him as well. Then we thought we were done, didn't we?
We were completely finished for, you know,
for 2023, probably.
Yeah.
In all honesty.
That was it.
given the fact of how close it is to Christmas now, we were far from done, Josh. We were far from done. Another one came in the door, this time with 20 goals in all competitions this season to his name for Maidstone United, and that was striker Levi Amanchi, who has represented a whole host of clubs across the English non-leagues in his previous career. Started out at Chesterfield as a youth player before breaking into the first team in their kind of first foray in National League football, and was then moved on to a number of different clubs where he scored goals, ended up being or sort of moving south gradually. He went to Brackley Town and Potter's Bar and then to Maidstone, where he has just had a phenomenal start to the season with 13 goals in the league and 7 goals in other competitions. And he already joins, he joins an already very talented front line here at Bromley with Michael Cheek and, of course, Olofela Olamola, Louis Dennis, George Alexander out on loan. But what I think, Josh, is he'll add something different. He'll add a different dimension to our play.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, his goal tally doesn't lie for this season, and he'll be coming in, you know, full of confidence. But obviously, Cheeky's been playing well, Fella's been playing well, so he'll have to compete for his spot. And yeah, like you said, we've got George Alexander, and you know, even Adam Marriott. I know he's had his injury problems this year, but I think we're looking strong up top. I think he's a really good signing, and hopefully he can take that confidence that he's been showing this season, albeit in a different division. But you know, maybe that's the a big piece in our jigsaw maybe. Going forward.
Well, like you say, it's scary to think that we've still got Adam Marriott, who is an excellent goal scorer at National League level, to come back, and he's making his return to fitness, which is really, really positive, and we look forward to seeing him again. But 6'3", Levi Amanchi as well. And you're talking about players like Miles Weston coming in, you know, with the deliveries into the box and just having that kind of big presence up front, taking the pressure off Michael Cheek a little bit, I think in that regard, will prove really, really helpful. And another one, Levi, like you say, players come in here and they react to these surroundings really positively. Levi came in and he said that he instantly knew he made the right decision in terms of how he was welcomed in by everyone and what he was seeing when he walked around with Andy Woodman and what he was chatting to Andy Woodman about. And I think you've got to give credit, and we'll catch up with Andy on this as well. You've got to give huge credit to the manager, who is attracting some fantastic players to this football club. It's sure to be a very exciting second half of the season, and one that we've shaped up really well with in terms of off the pitch, in terms of new signings, and of course all the work going on off the pitch as well. And we'll hopefully be able to update more on that in the coming months, is what I was getting at. But really positive news in these past couple of weeks with regards to new players, and very exciting festive period ahead.
However, there was a little bit of sad news, wasn't there, the other week?
There was a little bit of sad news, and it happened actually the day prior to the FA Trophy match against Slough Town, which of course Bromley ground out, I'll say, a 1-0 victory thanks to an early finish from Ryan Jones within the first 30 seconds. But before that, obviously, we had the disappointing news from a fan's perspective, and you know, us who loved seeing him around the place. Deji Lerroway was recalled by parent club Charlton Athletic just 24 hours prior to the FA Trophy game against Slough Town. And he's someone, Josh, that we've known, you know, since last season, really, since midway through last season. And he came in and made an impact, and we're smiling now because you did it in your signing video when he re-signed this year, that goal at Woking in the playoffs. That's a moment in club history, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it has to be, obviously, Cheeky at Wembley, but, you know, one of the most important goals in the club's history. And considering we weren't favourites against Woking and the way he popped up with that goal, and then he did it again this season. But I think his first game, if I remember rightly, back for his second spell, he was a little bit shaky, and I think he lost a bit of confidence. I think he, in the nicest way, probably didn't want to be back here, because obviously he did so well for us last season that, you know, maybe he wanted to be playing League One football again this year, but that didn't happen. And he's come back to us, and I think it knocked him a little bit early on, but you know, especially the couple of goals that he scored as well, his confidence just shot up, and you know, he'll be a miss again.
He will be, like you say, on the pitch, off the pitch as well. What a gentleman. Nice man. One of the best.
Brilliant.
One of the best.
Yeah.
Very down to earth.
But like I said, when he first joined, I remember the guys at Charlton saying he's the nicest person you'll come across, and he definitely is. And I hope he plays in League One every week and even higher, because he deserves that.
He certainly does, and we certainly wouldn't say no to seeing him in a Bromley shirt again, but we wish Deji Ilerioway all the very best going forward. And obviously that disappointing news that he had been recalled by Charlton, I guess for him there's a flip side in that he's going to get a chance at Charlton now, hopefully, and we wish him all the very best with that. It's been an exciting time as well for our under-21s, who continue their fantastic form this season. They had, and anyone who came to see this, you can't complain about value for money, a 5-5 draw. You heard that right. 5-5 against Woking, wasn't it? And actually, Josh, Bromley, I think, were 4-5 down with just a couple of minutes left and got the equaliser late on, didn't they?
Yeah. Do you know what? I can't remember how it panned out, but it was a bit of a madness. And Remy on a banjo scored again. I think that's 12 goals this season in only 10 games. Obviously that's the cup games aside, the county cup games aside. He's I think he's just gone out on a dual reg as well, so you know, that's good for him, and he's probably the next one that, you know, will be starting to catch the eye, because he's scoring every single game. But yeah, what a crazy Friday night of football
it was. And it was a Remy on a banjo penalty in injury time that pulled it back after Rashid Kamara was fouled. And we talk about Remy on a banjo actually scored a really, really good individual goal away to Met Police in the London Senior Cup a couple of weeks ago as well. Obviously Bromley falling to a penalty shootout defeat on the night, but a really positive performance from some of the young players on the night, including on a banjo and of course Sam German, who nodded home from a corner as well. Let's hope the under-21s can keep up their good form and hopefully get some more wins on the board as we head into 2024. And congratulations to all of the players and Jamel as well for bringing through this fantastic young talent, and all of the coaches and staff within the academy who are nurturing this talent, and many of whom will be catching the eye of Andy Woodman, no doubt. Talking of young players, we had a couple that went out on loan. That was Noah Joyce, who joined Erith and Belvedere on a one-month loan, and David Isaiah, the goalkeeper, who signed in the summer, the former Norwich City stopper, who has joined Dover Athletic and is getting some valuable experience there. Got a clean sheet on his debut in a 0-0 draw at home to Bath City for his loany side. So congratulations to him. Dover have found clean sheets a bit hard to come by this season, so good achievement for David on that occasion, and all the very best to them both as they continue their loan periods and most importantly gain valuable experience in the world of men's football and come back here better and more ready players to make that step up into the first team. Moving on then to Community Corner.
Yeah.
We don't have the sound. Is that the new sound effect for Community Corner?
That's the one.
That is the one. Okay. All right. We'll have to go with that then, people.
No, but anyway, I think in the new year, we'll pick a different sound.
New year, new jingles. I like that, Josh.
New year, new sound.
New year, new sound.
New host.
Is that our... Very funny. Is that our New Year's resolution, to get new jingles for these bits? Yeah. Well, we've got plenty else coming up on the podcast.
Do you know what? We should have put jingle, like little jingle bells over the top of the intro.
We should have done. Christmas. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. Yeah, but I was just going to say, we've got plenty in this podcast that could have its own section, could have its own jingle.
There you go.
We'll see. We'll see anyway. Moving on to Community in all seriousness. And it's been a hugely busy December month for all of the Community Trust team. Lots of stuff going on, as the activities at schools and the weekly soccer school sessions and things like that kind of wind down a little bit. We've got other things going on that are keeping the team very, very busy indeed. Two of those being things that are going on right now at the Relocate and Community Stadium. And that is our December soccer camp where we've got children here from 9 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. Being coached by our Bromley FC coaches, enjoying themselves, learning lots of new football skills and playing lots of games as well. And we've got our HAF camp, which stands for Holiday Activities and Food, which is targeted at children on free school meals and providing them with an opportunity to come down here and enjoy a day's football, as well as receiving a healthy, nutritious meal for their lunch. And that is all going swimmingly so far, and we're very much looking forward to the final couple of days on that one. A huge thank you to all of the parents and children and families who have engaged with us on that, and of course the Bromley Children and Families Forum. Sam and the team there have been fantastic as always in terms of helping us run these HAF programs, and we've got some quite exciting activities coming up for the children in the next couple of days as well. Also, what we've got coming up at this time of recording is the community Christmas party, which is taking place in Broomfield's Bar and Kitchen, and we've got two very, very, very special guests in the form of Santa Claus and Ronan the Raven, who are coming down to spread some festive cheer to all of the families involved in the community trust at the football club and the children that attend our activities. So we're very much looking forward to that. We've got arts and crafts, we've got the first team players from the men's and women's teams coming down to sign autographs and take selfies with the players, with the children, sorry, and of course Santa's Grotto, which is the highlight of the evening, and every child who visits Santa will leave with a gift. So very, very much looking forward to seeing what presents we've got in store, and of course some free tickets as well for matches, no doubt, for those children. So thank you to everyone really who's engaged with the Community Trust during this past year. We've grown dramatically, we've added further projects to our lineup. We're now working with in excess of 1,000 people a week. Our youngest participant is 18 months old in our Mini Raven sessions, and our oldest is 91. So we've really covered quite a wide breadth of people really and demographic in what is the biggest bar in London, as we look to improve the physical and mental well-being of all of the people within our community and within the reach of our football club. So thank you to everyone who's helped us along that journey and made that possible, and we look forward to growing bigger and better in 2024. Moving on now then, I talked earlier on about having three games ahead of the turn of the year, and the first of those is the visit of Altrincham on Saturday the 23rd of December. Kickoff 5:30, with it being live on TNT Sports, but make sure you're down here seeing all the action up close and personal. And do you remember that one, Josh, earlier on in the season? It's another team now that we will have ticked off playing twice at the end of that one. Do you remember that game? It was a quite an entertaining one.
It was, yeah. Todd Miller, late goal.
Miller's on fire, et cetera, et cetera.
Miller's on fire. Brilliant.
Oh, it, yeah, was, it was, wasn't
good.
It?
Corey Whiteley's first goal was good as well. Wasn't it,
it wasn't too bad, was it? No, it wasn't too bad. And actually, to be fair, the Altrincham goal was quite good as well. So you've seen, yeah, three well-worked goals there. And I remember it after. It's a really tough place to go and get a result, isn't it? Against a side who are currently fourth in the table, Bromley, of course, being second, enjoying a fantastic season. And I think they remind me of Gateshead a little bit, in the sense that they play excellent football. And Andy Woodman's whole thing is about stopping teams like that being able to play their football. He's said that many times, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. And, you know, we've done it the past couple of times. Obviously, we've drawn a couple of times as well. But, the like you say, it's a really tough place to go to. And we've won the past three times, is it now?
I think we have, yeah. Yeah.
So... yeah, I mean, they'll be wanting to stop us as well on Saturday. Obviously, we've got the home advantage as well, so anything can happen.
Memories of facing Altrincham here in one of the first games of the season last season. Do you remember in that
sweltering,
extreme heat where Kellen Fisher made his home debut, I think it was. I think he'd played prior to that. But he started that match at right back, and what a journey it would go on to be for him during that season. Hopefully, temperature's not going to be anywhere near half that this time. But make sure you're down here. Remember, it's a 5:30 kickoff. It should be an excellent game of football, hence why it's being televised by TNT Sports, and we thank them for their support, as we've been blessed really to have a few games on the telly so far this season, and long may that continue. Come on down for a bit of festive football before the before Christmas Day, essentially, because straight after that, away to Ipswich United, local derby, and then on Saturday the 30th, back home against Ipswich United, local derby. We had Southend last year. You can't class that as a local derby,
no,
can you?
No, I think the last one I can remember is probably Dover, wasn't it?
You know? Yeah, it was.
Wasn't it 3-0 away and then 3-0 at home?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah.
So we lost 3-0 and then won 3-0.
The results were reciprocated.
Yeah.
At each end there. But you're right, that is an example of a local-ish derby. But this one even more so, with Ebbsfleet being fairly close by. And they've had a bit of an up-and-down season so far. They've started to kind of turn it around a little bit recently, made some high-profile signings. Jordan Ibe playing for Ebbsfleet United, which is absolutely incredible, given that he was at AFC Bournemouth and Liverpool not so long ago, playing in the Premier League. So that'll be an interesting game, a visit to Stonebridge Road on Boxing Day, the 26th of December. You can find out more information on that one on the website, bromleyfc.co.uk. And then, of course, this year, traditionally we'd play on the New Year's Day. This year, both clubs and other clubs in the National League have agreed to bring those games forward to Saturday the 30th, and ours will be one of those. So Saturday the 30th of December, kickoff 3 p.m. here at the Relocatum Community Stadium as we take on Ebbsfleet United. Make sure you get your tickets for that one, again online at bromleyfc.co.uk, and sure to be an excellent atmosphere.
I think that's a really good decision as well, just touching on that, because obviously we're playing Tuesday and then Saturday again. It just keeps that routine, doesn't it?
Certainly does, because we're going to be, and we'll talk about it in the next podcast, but we're going to be away to Maidenhead the following Saturday. And yeah, you're right, it kind of breaks it up.
Because obviously the festive period usually just throws everything out the window a little bit. Mm. Teams are playing on a Thursday and all sorts. So, yeah, it's good that we've still got that Saturday, Tuesday running, really, like with the whole player schedule and everything. It's, yeah.
Going to make a point here as well. It, like we said, it's not typical that this happens. Generally speaking, the games are on New Year's Day. Some of these players won't have been able to spend New Year's with their families for quite a few years now, which, you know, I'm not getting the violin out for footballers or whatever. But, you know, these guys are able to spend that very special time with their families, a lot of them with young families this time, which I think is really nice as well. Mm. And, you know, being able to play on that Saturday, we've got the added benefit, like you say, of it being a Saturday and then carrying on in that vein as we go into January and beyond. But it'll be nice for the players to spend some time with their families in what is a special day for a lot of people. Before we get our interviewees onto the podcast today, let's have a look back at the recent fixtures. Of course, since we were last with you, we hosted Rochdale at the Relocatum Community Stadium. And Josh, the first half of that one was certainly one to forget, wasn't it? Not so eventful.
No, wasn't great, was it? But I think there's been a couple of games where, you know, we're picking up the points, but you wouldn't really look back on it with much more detail than, you know, one goal and that's it. But I think that's a winner's mentality. Just, you know, beat what's in front of you, pick up the points, clean sheet, onto the next one. And I think that's happened a couple of times. Obviously, Eastleigh at home as well wasn't the greatest of games, but 1-0 win, that's, yeah, it's the perfect win, isn't it?
And as Andy Woodman would say, that's what people are going to remember, not necessarily how the game played out, but the result. And I've got to say, we've got to shout someone out here, because Olofela Olamola has come in. He scored 5 goals in 10 games in all competitions so far. He got the winner in the 79th minute of that one. It was an excellent goal, really well taken. And he's come in and made such an impact.
He has, yeah. I think his lightning pace is probably what has stood out the most, just how, you know, how much of a nightmare he is to defend against. And yeah, it's a different sort of striker to the ones that we had at the club already. And yeah, he's an exciting talent.
Certainly is exciting, the way he runs at defences and the finishes that he's got at his disposal as well. That was certainly a very good example of one of them. And of course, Ryan Jones as well, starting that game and putting in a good shift. And we move on to next week, or the following week after that, and we hosted Slough Town. Unfortunately, a bit of a similar story in terms of the game, which is certainly not one to remember. But what was to remember was the first 30 seconds, essentially. That was it. Excellent goal from Ryan Jones, a really good build-up, and that'll do his confidence the world of good.
Yeah, I think he needed that, didn't he? He was obviously played a couple of times before, I think, York away, I can remember, and then obviously playing in the County Cup games as well. But yeah, I think he's played well the past couple of games. Obviously, he didn't play at Southend, but yeah, I think that'll do him the world of good.
Indeed, it will. And it was that sole strike from Ryan Jones that saw Bromley to victory over Slough Town on that day, of course, in the Conference South. And actually, played some pretty good football in that game. We've got to give Slough some credit. They did attack after that goal went in, and like I say, the game just kind of petered out. They hit the post with a well-struck effort, couple of saves from Teddy Sharman Lowe. Bromley almost went 2-0 up. Louis Dennis having an effort saved very well in the latter stages of that first half, and then it just kind of petered out in the second half. And Andy Woodman said in his interview, it's not what people remember, it's the result and it's the progression to the next round. And of course, the draw was held live on TalkSport 2 the following Monday at 3:15 p.m. and Bromley were drawn out of the hat. I think we were the last to be drawn out, weren't we?
Yeah, I think we were.
At home to Chippenham Town, also of the National League South. And that tie will be taking place on Saturday, the 13th of January, kickoff 3 p.m. So make sure you get your tickets for that one at bromleyfc.co.uk or pop into the club shop to get yours in person. Remember that season tickets are not valid for that one as it is not a National League fixture. Get your tickets. Make sure you're there. Could be the start of something again. You just never know. There's plenty of good things going on and off the pitch this season. Make sure you are there to soak up every minute that you can and really be a part of it, because the support this season on the terraces, both home and away, has been absolutely phenomenal. And another example of that would be seen, Josh, as we made the trip to Southend United on the 16th of December, which is a very tough place to go. Only Hartlepool United and, bizarrely, AFC Fylde, who find themselves at the wrong end of the table, had taken tasted victory at Roots Hall in the National League so far this season. And an interesting afternoon, shall we say. Lots of things going on. Of course, always a very healthy crowd, very large crowd at Roots Hall. But the atmosphere generated by the Bromley fans was terrific, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was another good win. And I think, obviously, the game changed a lot when their goalkeeper had to go off injured and their right back went in goal, and it just sort of, yeah, didn't really go to plan. I think Southend were on the front foot after that, but, you know, another one, we look back on it, another win, and yeah, it was a good win at the end of the day.
Certainly was. And you talk about the game changing. There were plenty of times in that game where the game sort of flipped on its head. Southend were dominating towards the end of that first half, but a really well-worked goal to open it for Bromley. Josh Pasley with a very deep cross into the back post, and Michael Cheek nodded it on a sixpence to the edge of the six-yard box. And Corey Whiteley was there in the right place at the right time to convert. An excellent finish from him and a very well-deserved goal. He's been playing some great football recently. Going into the second half, going into the halftime break, that will have affected Southend. It was deep into 7 minutes of injury time, that one. Michael Cheek getting the second goal on 54 minutes, just 9 minutes into that second half, following an excellent bit of pressing from Bromley, in particular Olafella Olamola, capitalising on an error from Ollie Kensdale, and went through into the box. And we talked about Olamola earlier. You've got to say that the unselfish nature.
So unselfish.
Brilliant.
So unselfish. I mean, it, you know, the typical modern-day striker will be trying to round that goalkeeper and slot it home, but that was very, very unselfish from Fella.
Certainly was, and he went into the box one-on-one with Dave Martin, the goalkeeper, squared it to Michael Cheek, who had the simple job of prodding into an empty net, and that's exactly what he did, just in front of the 300 or so Bromley fans who'd made the journey and were making some absolutely fantastic noise throughout that game. So well done to all of the travelling fans who made the journey to that one, and a big thank you to Holly and Dave for putting on not one but two supporters coaches this time, and that was certainly an enjoyable journey home despite all the issues with the traffic and disruption on the road as well. But another win for Bromley at Roots Hall. And Bromley, of course, for the first time this season, we'd played Rochdale twice, drew the first game with them, beat them in the second. That is the first time Bromley have done a league double over a team so far this season. And only the second time of playing a team twice, the second time of asking. So I think that's pretty impressive, especially against a side who, despite their points deduction and everything that's gone against them, you've got to give credit to Kevin Maher, the manager, who's really galvanised the troops down there. And they've been playing some excellent football, getting some great results. They beat Chesterfield at Roots Hall, who currently sit top of the league, of course, it was a really impressive victory. No matter what anyone says about the goalkeeper, that seemed to galvanise Southend even further, if I'm being honest. But yeah, an excellent result on the road, and we move on to this coming Saturday, as we said earlier, as we take on fourth place Altrincham at the relocated Community Stadium. Make sure you get your tickets for that one online at bromleyfc.co.uk. And now it's time for everybody's favourite segment, or certainly my favourite segment, of the Ravens Weekly podcast, and that is Roy Remembers. And we've got a very special Roy Remembers lined up today, haven't we, Mr. Oliver?
Absolutely, yes. An old manager and an old player.
Well,
they're not that old.
I was going to say, come on, we want them to stay and chat to us, Roy. We are delighted today to be joined by Bobby George and Stuart McIntyre, former Bromley player and former Bromley manager, respectively. Gents, welcome. First of all, how's it feel to be back?
Feels amazing, doesn't it, Bobby?
Yeah, wonderful.
You know, what great progress.
Great seeing Stuart today. It's been a long time, and great being back at the club.
Yeah. Lots of memories flooding back, I'm sure, and we're going to uncover some of those as we go along. And of course, Roy was at the game we're going to speak about, which was, of course, the cup final, wasn't it, of 20 years ago. What are your memories of that, first of all, Bobby?
It was a fantastic game, Matt. I mean, unbelievable. Leading up to it, you know, obviously we felt confident, and we had a great side. We knew we were playing Ford United, who had a strong team as well, by the way. But, you know, we were prepared. You know, Stuart had us well drilled. And I mean, the whole occasion was memorable and a special time, special moment for the fans. Great to win it, and clean sheets always good as well. So, yeah, it was a great time.
Stuart, as Bobby says there, a memorable day. What were your memories of particularly the build-up and the preparation for that game?
I think probably looking back, for me, the biggest part of the build-up was everybody had this vision that Ford United under Craig Edwards were a stronger side than us. They were a league above, they were going well. But we had such a good group of players. And if the biggest challenge for me was who was in and who was out, who was on the bench. You know, it was then added to by Chuck Martini was ill, Mark Harris had a neck injury, Wade Falana had a calf problem, and they were all probably players that would have started. All three probably would have started, but I couldn't make that decision. So I then looked at Ford United's strengths and I looked at our strengths, particularly people like Bobby and Kurt Watts, and I made a decision that everything was going to be about the modern game, funnily enough, back then. Was we kind of played with three up front almost, Gary Drewitt, Bobby and Kirk, and stopped their fullbacks coming on to us as much as we possibly could. And I think that paid off in the day.
Very much so. Yeah. Very much.
Going into the game as a player and the rest of the team, was there that belief that Bromley could do it despite being the underdogs? And there have been numerous other occasions of that over the past few years.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, as Stuart said, you know, the group of players that we had an array of talent. And as unfortunately, we had a few players that we couldn't select from. But I just felt that for me as a player, when it was the time to step up, you know, I was capable of doing that. And we wanted to do well and etch our name in history, you know.
And you talk about stepping up. You had quite a pivotal role, actually, in that win, didn't you? Do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, so funny enough, the game actually played in my favour or in our favour because Stuart was right about how we approached the game. Because we had a lot of pace, I felt that caused Ford United quite a lot of problems and they were dropping off. So if you look at the game, you will see that there's occasions where either me, Adolf, Gary, we were able to pick up the ball between the lines and turn and attack them, and that caused them a hell of a lot of problems.
And somebody else that was at the game, as I've already said, is Roy. Roy, do you remember that one well? What are your memories of it?
I do, yeah. And some of the players, I mean, as Stuart was saying, Mark Harris... Very experienced player, wasn't he? Very experienced player. And you had Kurt Watts could fly down the wing. Gary Drew was very good as well.
Yeah.
One of the unluckiest players I always felt in the team was John Wilford. Because he had quite a few injuries, didn't he? And I always thought that really hampered his career.
Did.
I thought he was a very good player. Mm-hmm. I saw him a few years ago. He was down at Holmesdale.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was down there.
Yeah, now John was a very talented player.
Yeah.
During my time, he had ankle injuries. He had a broken ankle. He had three times he dislocated his shoulder. He dislocated his shoulder, came back on Boxing Day at Dulwich, and towards the end of the first half, dislocated it again.
Yeah.
And he was, you're right, a very, very talented boy.
Yeah.
After I left here, I think he was still playing for Bromley, or maybe not, but he was playing down at Bashley in the New Forest and got a broken leg, really badly broken leg. Almost lost his leg because of it. But, Roy, you're absolutely right. He was a talented boy and couldn't stay on the pitch.
No, sick note, I think
we would have called him in the modern game.
But we had a very good team in them days as well. You know, very, you know, you go right through the players there, you know, as they grow. But Joe Fiennes, I mean, if anyone got in his way, boom, they went down. But, it, you know, a good player, Joe Fiennes.
Yeah, he was man of the match at the game on the final.
Yeah, yeah. And the gate was 338.
I know.
Which probably was more Bromley than Falls United.
Without a doubt.
Yeah, because we always took a lot of supporters away from home.
Yeah, it was a fantastic Bromley support on the night. Yeah. Fantastic atmosphere. Felt like there was more than that to me. I think that might be the official number rather than the unofficial.
Yeah.
Crowd
was
probably a little bit bigger, as happened in those days.
Yeah, we're still quite noisy.
Very much so.
Yeah, we'd have it.
Particularly Roy shouting at the linesman, as you do, probably. Speaking of which, Stuart, four sending offs in the game. What was your take on that? What happened?
It sounds absolutely terrible, right? And I bumped into Ian Crouch, the referee, a few months after the game. And I think, had we had VAR, I don't think anyone would have been sent off in that game. I think they would have looked at it. Everybody was involved. You clearly were killing the game if you sent off 10.
Yeah.
So the referee picked who he and his two linesmen, who he felt were, I suppose their behaviour was worse than anyone else in the fracas that involved almost every player on the pitch. Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, Danny Smith didn't get sent off, did he?
No, he did.
Oh, he did. He was first. He did. My apologies. He did. Then John Meyer, who definitely shouldn't have been sent off, and Colin Luckett for something he said rather than anything he particularly did.
Yeah, the report says that Colin Luckett said, "Get a grip, referee," and the referee gave him the red card.
Yeah, I mean, as I say, I bumped into Ian Crouch, the ref, and I think they were almost playing from what do we think we saw rather than 100% sure what they did see. And how you could pick three of ours and only one of theirs, I found very difficult at the time. Surprisingly, I was calm, right? You know, if you look back at the video, that I didn't get too excited. I don't know why. It wasn't my normal way. That season, I'd been sent off twice. But I think you mentioned Mark Harris earlier.
Yeah,
you know, despite Mark actually being injured, I put him on the bench. And we were talking about it before the game, about situations that might happen. And we didn't talk about there being three players sent off with 5 minutes to go. But we did talk about being 1-0 up with 5 minutes to go. And I said, if we get to that, can I put you on just to organise tired legs? Because they will be. You know, they'll have given so much and make sure we still were tight, and not just sitting back and letting them have it. And it transpired that Mark played for 5 or 6 minutes plus a little bit, and that's all he did. He didn't touch the ball. I don't remember him touching the ball, but he organised 8 of us to keep them out and ensure that we went, you know, through the game and finished as winners.
I was just going to say that. How do you deal with that in a cup final? It's nervy, or it can be nervy enough being 1-0 up with 11v11, but to have, what, 8 versus 10 was it in the end? How did you cope with that?
I don't know whether you agree, Stuart, but I didn't see us losing that game for some reason. And, you know, the experience that we had in the team, such as Colin Luckett, Mark Harris, you know, they were good communicators, good characters in the dressing room. And that's why we felt confident, because we had a lot of young talent, people with a lot of energy. But then those individuals, I think, just kept it calm, organised, and just saw the game out. It was because 8 players is so small, so short.
Yeah, I think we went down to 8 players, and it was only not long to go. They sort of try to throw the kitchen sink at us.
They did.
But they didn't sort of get anywhere at all, did they?
No.
Yeah. I remember Danny made one fairly big save towards the end of the game. Danny Harwood did.
Yeah.
So everyone played the part from that point of view.
Yeah.
But we do it in coaching sessions. When I did my UEFA A coaching badge, they do a 6v3 defending situation, which I hadn't done for about 4 or 5 years, you know, but it's in your mind. And people like Grant Watts, Billy Manuel, Mark Harris, when you say to them, this is your role, right, for 5 minutes, this is your role, we don't break ranks, you know it will stick, because these are guys that have been in the Football League. Mm. So they understand that you can't go and try and score a second goal to get yourself a sort of bit of space. It doesn't happen. That was never really an option. Mm. So we didn't sit deep. We didn't sit too close to our 18-yard box. But we were, you know, a back four and three players, stayed tight and just kept the ball. You know, we kept moving it. And I remember the last couple of minutes, just it was being launched, you know, up the other end of the field. They'd come back at us. But we stood firm, you know, but Bobby's right, you know, that there was within that group, there was a belief that we're going to get this over the line.
Yeah.
And the scenes at the end.
And I think that for me, Ford, I felt that they had only two real main threats. They had a fullback on loan from Charlton called, I think his name was Danny Collis, and he was pinging the ball from right to left.
Yeah.
And then they had Mervyn Abrahams, who was a striker, quite nippy up top, mm-hmm. you know, but we marshalled them very, very well. And, you know, I thought the possession of the game was quite even. I thought we looked more, we had more chances.
Yeah.
I think we threatened their goal more. I remember hitting the post during the game. And then
Joe Vines had up at I think it was a corner, headed one gnarly over when it was a fantastic header. Yeah, Joe was rightly man of the match because his defence organisation without Mark Harris, which wasn't something he'd normally done. Mm. So he was with Colin, and Joe's pace came through on that night. You know, he was a very strong defender.
Yeah.
And I signed him from Cray Wanderers at the beginning of that season, and he'd played up front in Cray Wanderers reserves, and he was kind of breaking into the Cray first team.
Yeah.
But I saw the talent as a defender, and he came here.
Yeah.
First game he played on, when he came off the bench, he played on the right of a three, and he just cemented himself into the team from that point onwards.
Yeah. I'm starting to draw, I wasn't at the game, you were. I'm starting to draw parallels here between what the gents are saying and the Bromley team of recent years in terms of that determination, that doggedness and putting bodies on the line and just being a team and being a really close-knit team. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because as I said to Stuart earlier, you know, I always remember what Bill Shankly said, you'll win matches you shouldn't have won, you'll lose matches you should have won,
it's
what you do over the whole season. And you need a group of players what are gonna gel together and battle together. Because football is a team game, it's not an individual game.
Totally.
So you need all the elements of that team getting in there and being a team.
He sat right next to you, but I'm going to ask you anyway, what was Stuart like as a manager?
I think for me, and I've had a chat with a couple of the players actually, to be honest, but I think apart from one or two, I would say Stuart always kept all the players on their toes. You never knew whether you're going to be playing all the time. There was a few mainstays, but everybody was always on their toes. You know, he was well drilled. Always had a good training session for us. You know, we were training Tuesdays, playing Tuesdays, sometimes training, but also training on Thursdays. You know, he used to take part in the training. So, you know, you might hear ex-pros talk about ex-professionals who become managers and they're actually in the drills, training sessions, hitting balls into the top corner, et cetera, et cetera. You know, Stuart would be on the training pitch with us and actually showing us what he wants to do. And I always remember... it's so funny because I've never, you know, worked with a Scottish manager before. And, you know, they're very passionate. And obviously in training, if I was hitting the ball wide or it's going over, I used to remember Stuart going, Bobby. make sure you get your head and your knee over the ball over here. Bang. And he used to get up there and he used to do the drill.
And I could shoot.
He could shoot. Yeah, and his big calves and everything else. And, you know, it was really, really good. I mean, I enjoyed working under Stuart. He got me from Banstead. I was doing well there. I was a big fish probably in a small pond. I came to Bromley and there was, you know, a group of players that were good. So I had to step up and there was a lot of learning for me to do, you know, and I think Stuart managed a group of players very, very well. You know, it's, when I think back about how much talent we had there, it must have been difficult to keep everyone happy. But for me, I got to play in the final of the London Senior Cup and I set up the winning goal. I actually did something that probably wasn't my strongest attribute, which was obviously holding the ball. You know, I turned and then I actually rolled in. I think it was Kurt Watts who clipped the keeper for the winner. Yeah. So that made me quite proud because, you know, whilst I perhaps lacked consistency over seasons, I always felt I was ready for the big games. And I was just grateful for Stuart giving me the opportunity because he definitely could have played a different side with me not in it.
And Stuart, similar question to you. How would you sum up the squad and the team of that time?
I thought the group of boys were tremendous. They worked with. They were very reliable. You know, most of them were here on time every session. We didn't have too big a problem with fines or anything like that because of lateness. They would apply themselves. They were a group that were fit, despite we didn't have the facilities that exist at the club, for example, today. I would have loved to work with that group of players with the facilities that exist today. I think they would have achieved even more. So I was very proud of that group of boys. And some of them were very young and very inexperienced. You know, we're talking about Joe Vines, Bobby, Gary Druitt. I mean, this was their first club, really, professional club in the Ryman South. And it was a strong league. I mean, some of the teams to play against, Bognor, Dulwich at the time, Tooting and Mitcham at the time. You know, it was a great league to play in. And I think sixth, probably we fell slightly short of where we could have been. Couple of, as you said, Roy, we lost a couple of games that we just never should have lost. We battered teams and didn't score goals and then we're hitting the break. But that is this game. It's a beautiful game.
Yeah, that's what happens every year. Yeah. You lose games. We played, who did we play? We lost 3-2.
Aldershot.
We were all over. We scored two goals in the first 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And we should have been four up at half time. And then they came into it, got one goal back. And then we got a player sent off. And then we still had plenty of chances.
Yeah.
But they came back and got the winner in the end.
Absolutely.
Nothing's changed, has it?
No.
But in all seriousness, at the end of that game, from your perspective, we'll come to you in a minute. What was the feeling at the full time whistle?
Well, for me, absolutely amazing because I had never won anything at that level before. So it kind of made the transfer that I made from Banstead to Bromley all worthwhile. Everyone was so happy. I mean, considering you are aware of the fact that we only had eight players, we finished a game with eight players. You know, it was nice to come away from a hard worked a season that was very competitive in league to be able to win a trophy. And what's really touching for me is probably about six years ago, I actually played here for a Sunday team. And I didn't realise that the club had wrapped the wall in some of the winning sides. And there's a big, you know, wall to floor poster of our team. And looking at the players and looking at the joy that was in our faces, it's just a shame we didn't have any champagne on the night. I think Stuart, I remember we were. If you look at the picture, I was throwing the water out of the water bottle.
We did the champagne in the dressing room.
And Stuart, your own feelings at full time?
It was fantastic. You know, it was exhilarating. I remember looking up at the fans and the fans behind the goal. You know, and it was a feeling of, this is important for this football club because it's been a big club before and it had hit some bumpy road before Gerry Dalkey came in. And it was I related it to when you're building a tent, you put the pegs in the corners, you know, and it was a major peg, right, in the stability of this football club and the opportunity to build and go forward. And I think I said to Bobby when we got here, without that cup run and that win, I'm not sure Jerry's energy level would have continued the way it did, because he was having some challenging times the previous season, and it gave him something to really talk about. I remember going to his house and the trophy was on top of the TV the week after, and he said, that means so much. And I felt it, not just from Jerry, but from everybody in black and white that night at Dagenham. And we came back to the club and we were in the bar till 2 o'clock in the morning talking about the amateur trophy win, you know, 50 years previous or 60 yeah. years previous yeah. and what it had meant at the time. And that was my big memory afterwards, was this is foundation, building a foundation. And, you know, 20 years later, it's an important foundation. It was an important step. And then a couple of years later, there was promotion, and it goes on and on. But you need a first big step. Mm. And that trophy and the attitude of those players was so important.
What was the feeling on the terraces, Roy, at the end of that one?
Always elation. You know, it's important for every club to win a trophy at the end of the season. So it's really important. And it's a stepping stone, isn't it? Because success breeds success. And it started us on that journey, like, you know, then we got promotion, as you say, and we've just been upward training ever since.
Yeah.
And the club has become so professional in everything it does, which is so important, you know, if you want to keep the momentum going at this level.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but, you know, the first stepping stones is, say, as you say, we were a great club through the 40s and 50s, winning everything, amateur internationals galore. But then we hit some lean years, mid-60s and to the sort of mid-70s. And it was up and down, promotion and relegation and promotion. But you start that run, and winning a trophy like a London Senior Cup was great, because we, as Bromley supporters, we go bloody mad at the end of the game
when
we won the trophy.
Absolutely.
Because it's not only the team's, Bromley Football Club's trophy, it's a supporters' trophy as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we love it.
Absolutely.
And I think Mark Harris and Johnny Might actually lifted the trophy with the supporters behind at the end of the game, because the way that the trophy was presented, it was by the dugouts. So obviously they were able to lift it, and as players we were there on the grass, just applauding, and the fans were going crazy.
Yeah, very much. Yeah, I remember it as a wild, high energy night. Mm.
Yeah. And the best bit about it is as soon as we walked in today, Roy, you know, I remember your face. You know, so it just shows what a key part our fans have played
in
the resurgence of the club and how important you are to Bromley. And you know, I see the amazing things the club has done in the community. You know, it's been great for me, because when it's my turn to do the weekly shopping, when there's big games on the fixtures, I can't get into Bromley, so I get the weekend.
Sorry about that.
So,
Joe Vines has joined us now. Would you like to shuffle around a little bit for us, Joe?
Fashionably late.
Yeah, let your tackles. Good to see you, son.
How are you, Joe? You all right?
Joe, it's great timing. Thanks so much for joining us today. It's great to have you back. What are your memories of that London Senior Cup final of 20 years ago?
It was a long time ago. There's a lot of water under the bridge since then. I remember it because I was excited about playing in a proper stadium. I was excited about going to Dagenham and Redbridge. And I always enjoyed the big games. So for me, I must have been 22, something like that. 21, 22, so still quite a youngster. But I was just excited about, you know, being involved in a big game on the day. And where it was an evening match as well, you've got the whole sort of day build up to it, where you're thinking about it constantly. Obviously going to work and not getting a lot done. You know, as the part-time players that we were, So yeah, it was brilliant. Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
And there is something, we always say it nowadays, I don't know if it's the same with all of you, but football under floodlights, there is something special about it, isn't there? Particularly in that cup final scenario.
I still love it to this day. So I'm still involved in the game and, you know, under the lights in an evening, bit of dew on the grass. I don't think there was much grass on it on that day, was there? It was a little bit threadbare, but yeah, it's always exciting under the lights.
And you picked up the Man of the Match award. Which must have been a really proud moment for you, alongside obviously winning the trophy as well.
Yeah, I think it's because I was one of only a few Bromley players that were left on the pitch.
I was going to say that, yeah.
So, yeah, you know, Bob sent through a video of it yesterday evening. We were laughing about it because I think pretty much every player got involved in it.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, I think that was testament to the team, right? We were very, very together. It was a great group. I spoke to Mark Harris last night for the first time in a long time, and he reminded me he's 60 now, which is frightening in itself, and he's only just finished playing as well, by the way, which I don't know how he's doing it. He's dragging himself around the pitch. Yeah, it was good. I thought, you know, it was a good performance. I played well enough without, I didn't think at the time it was a spectacular performance for me, but it was a little bit backs against the wall, and I was, you know, as I continued to be throughout my career, I was good at heading and volleying. Yeah. And I had a good day for that.
And obviously with the sending offs, four in total, three for Bromley, so we finished with eight players on the pitch. What was that like for you in those final few minutes?
It was carnage, but it was brilliant. I can imagine for the spectators, for people like Roy, you know, it must have been great to watch. I always had this thing as a young man, I carried it throughout my career. Whenever there was a trophy to be had, I always liked to get my hand on it because then you're in all the pictures.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I passed that on to a few of my mates. And I think when I look back and I look at this one in particular, I'm there grasping that trophy, you know, like my life depends on it.
And we've spoken to the other two gents about the memories of that team and what was it like to be a part of that team at that time?
Yeah, I mean, there were players in that side. I mean, obviously, Bromley as a club has progressed, you know, it's for all intents and purposes now, it's a League Two club, it's a League Two setup. But we were operating at the Ryman Division One at that time. But there were really, really good players in that side, exceptionally good players. I spoke of Gary Drewitt. Yeah. For me, he's one of the best players I've ever played with. Like, he was a phenomenal player. For a man who's probably 6'1", 6'2", he just used to sort of glide.
Dead.
He was a wonderful, you know, his manipulation of the ball. You know, the surface out here by November, it was all sand out. It was, you know, the pitch was a very different place, right? But he was a player that I couldn't quite understand why he didn't play at, you know, in the league. Kirk Watts was magic. He had one trick, but it worked every time. He was a beautiful footballer. I was fortunate enough to play with Kirk elsewhere as well. He's a good friend of mine. Adolf was a goal scorer that we got him from Palace.
Yeah, Palace released him and I signed him.
He was phenomenal. Yeah. He was a wonderful scorer of goals. He wasn't a wonderful goal scorer in terms of, he didn't go, you know, didn't have a showreel of the 30 best Adolfo Moko goals, but it would come off his knee, it would come off his, whatever, and he
didn't strike the ball cleanly.
No, but it went in the back of the net.
It went in the back of the net.
Yeah, he was a terrific player. Yeah. So I was very fortunate. During my time, I had a couple of spells at Bromley to play with some really, really good players. But like mentioning Mark Harris as well, he taught me the game. And when I spoke to him last night, I thanked him and said, "You taught me things you didn't realise." He wasn't consciously that he said, "Right, do this, do that." But I used to watch him in the dressing room and I used to see what he did because it inspired me. I thought, well, if he does it, I should do it. And those things are carried on. So I was very fortunate to play in that team.
Yeah, he was a very experienced player, wasn't he?
Oh, he was a terrific player.
He played in the league as well. You know, he had that calming effect, didn't he? You know, he was, where the players might be sort of getting a bit tense, he would be quite calm.
He was never flustered.
Never flustered, no.
Yeah, unflappable. Yeah.
On the pitch.
Yeah.
I'll tell you a story about Mark, though. When I met Mark I was at Kingstonian and we were in the football conference, and you would hear him 10, 15 minutes before kickoff in the toilets being sick.
Oh, really?
So even though he'd played hundreds of games in the Football League, playing in the National League for K's still meant so much to him. And that was when Mark and I first sort of gelled together. He had a couple of injuries, small injuries, but it was an important game on a Saturday and he played for K's reserves on the Wednesday night. And he and I just hit it off. You know, and so when he was ready to leave and I was getting the job at Bromley, I appointed him as my assistant manager. But I said, you have to play because you will teach boys just by things yeah. you do. You know, and even I think it's an amazing talent to have. He could deliberately put in a late challenge. You know, he could have got there earlier, but he would have won the ball and then still been in a dangerous position. So he had a knack of being able to take the ball and the player, right? So that when he got up with the ball, there was no one there.
Yeah,
you know, it was terrific. Incredible yeah. way to play the game, and the knowledge that he passed on to people like Joe was, it was subtle. You know, it was tiny little things sometimes and a major parts of the game in other times.
Stuart and Bobby, we'll come back to you for this one. On a general level, since you left as players and managers, now you've come back, it's changed quite a bit since then, hasn't it? Even just walking up into this room that we're in now, you can see some of the changes and the investment that's been made into the facilities. What's your take on that?
Well, for me, I think it's unbelievable. If you think about some of the things that this country has been through over the years in terms of the pandemic and everything else, and businesses, us losing businesses and people, I think from a community perspective, the club has done so great because, not only will the success or has the success helped the community in terms of financially, in terms of business, because of obviously the amount of people that come to the stadium to watch games now, you've also focused on the community and developing young children. You know, it helps kids get off the streets. It helps them give them something to focus on. So for me, when I'm part of this community, I don't live too far away. And for me personally, when I see the infrastructure, everything that has been put in place for the children here, for if you think about jobs and the roles that you guys have, it's good because you don't have to necessarily go into the city. There's work here for people that live in the local community, and I just think it's just been great. I mean, looking at the whole stadium, I'm just lost. I'd love to get a full tour one day to see what's going on here.
We'll certainly
take a couple of days, I think.
We'll certainly do that. Stuart, you've already said as well you'd love to have managed that team with the facilities and the setup that we've got here now.
Absolutely. I think how I would describe it, when I first came here before we signed the team that we had, it was a team that played in black and white, but the club was dull. It was down. There were a lot of broken things around the club. And Jerry put a lot of energy, and his family put a lot of energy and time and money into the regeneration of the club. Today, it still plays in black and white, but it's a colourful place.
Yeah.
There's an energy, there's a vibrancy, there's facilities are one thing, but people... There's a saying in Glasgow, people make Glasgow. People make Bromley. People make Bromley Football Club. And that's what I see today. And I guess I'm a little bit jealous.
Yeah.
I'd love to have been working at the club in this time.
Yeah. I was just going to say, Joe, as well, you've had the benefit of coming here quite a number of times over the years in, for various different reasons, including your coaching career as well. Mm. You've kind of seen it, those steps taken, haven't you?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose my closeness to Bromley now... is that the CEO Mark Hammond I grew up with from 10 years old, so I know him really well. I was here last week for a birthday party for George Wakelin. It was his 80th celebration, although his 80th is in a couple of days' time, and I was involved here when I was at Cray Wanderers. We've got a boy on loan at the moment, Marcus Sablia.
Yeah, Marcus, yeah.
Terrific player. So Woody, I speak to Woody every so often. I speak to Steve Harris as well. So my involvement is a little bit more close, but I stick with you, Stuart. I'm a bit jealous of it, if I'm honest. It's terrific. My own son now is 7 and he's playing locally, and there's a boy in his team who supports Bromley. Like, it's phenomenal. You've got the Man Cities and the Tottenhams and the Arsenals, and he's an avid Bromley supporter. So that wouldn't have happened in my day. Sound like a real old fuddy duddy now. That's the truth of it. It was unfashionable. You've got your boys and your stalwarts, but You know, that collective of, we might have got 300 maybe through the door. I mean, you look at the crowds now, and look at the success they're bringing on the pitch.
Yeah.
And then outside of that, the academy setup is, in my opinion, one of the strongest in the area. Professional outfit or not, you know, you've got Crystal Palace, you've got Charlton, you've got these clubs that soak up all of the good talent. Bromley are doing it, and they're selling players as well.
And it's interesting you say that, because the marketing and the PR behind the track suits, the bags, you know, actually I probably see more Bromley branding and logos than I do probably Crystal Palace
locally,
and locally and that. And I know that they're over in Selhurst and everything else, but you know, I see a lot more people wearing the Bromley outfit.
And the gents have already commented on laying the foundations. You must have a little bit of pride looking back at that victory, that day in particular, because every one of those victories, and particularly that one, has played its part in getting the club to where it is now.
Yeah, and again, look, being familiar with the other players that followed me as well, you know, when I think about, you know, the club that got promotion to the Conference South was a big stepping stone. I think that was probably, you know, I'm not taking anything away, you know, the London Cup was obviously the biggest cup, you know, that we all aspire to win when we were small children. But, you know, the club has stepped on and on and on. I think every time it's had a period where it's not stagnated, but it's slowed down, there's been a moment that has created another push, you know, that impetus has come. I'm hopeful that our small piece of history made a difference, certainly to some of the supporters. I was really fortunate that, you know, I got a man of the match on that day, but also one player of the year that year, supporters player. I think I've got manager's player as well. I don't know if you had an off day.
I'll tell you a funny story that I'll never ever forget, right, about signing Joe Vines. I saw the talent of Joe playing for Cray, and I approached him in the summer, and it was probably the start of my first full season at the club. And Joe and I had a good chat, and he said to me, he phoned me back afterwards, the next day I think it was, and he said, I'm not going to come at the moment because I've spoken to a few people and I've heard you're not quite ready yet. That was your words. Do you remember this?
No.
Right.
Sounds like me though.
But a few weeks later, we played Cray in a pre-season friendly, a friendly that we eventually won 6-1 or 6-2 in a pre-season friendly. And when the fourth goal went in, Gary Drewitt pinged in a beautiful goal. Joe was running back past me and he looked at me and he said something, and I said, but we're not quite ready yet, Joe. And it obviously stuck with him, because a couple of weeks later, Joe phoned me up and he said, is that offer to sign still there? And I said, it is, but you're not going to go straight into the team because I've signed someone else, right? But I knew that I wanted Joe Vines in the team, not as an attacker, but as a defender. I saw the pace, the commitment, the power in the air. And two or three games later, we played an FA Cup game. I can't remember.
That is against Bat Sports.
That's it, yeah. And after 20 minutes, we were 2-0 down. Two freak goals. One came off Mark Harris's chest and flew into the net. And at halftime, I said to Joe, right, you're going on. I'm going three at the back. I don't want you to drift forward. I just want you to defend, right? The wing-backs, Colin Luckett's going to push up. Danny Smith on the other side, I think, was playing.
Yeah.
And we are going to go for this game. And we eventually won 3-2. And
I've got a man in the match in that one as well.
I'm not surprised.
But half a game.
Jerry said to me after the game, Jerry said his thought process in the stand when he saw us coming out and Joe played right side of three at the back, that I didn't know what I was doing. That was Jerry's thinking. So I think Jerry was probably thinking the end was nigh for me then if we'd lost that game. But instead we kicked on and you stayed in the team pretty much the whole season. Yeah. And as you say, the rest is history. You know, the awards keep coming. And I don't know how many trophies you've won in your career, but it'll be double figures.
Yeah, I've done okay. Yeah. I think that these are defining moments in anyone's career. You know, you look at you know, someone getting injured and you get an opportunity, or you know, there's an illness or whatever it might be. And that, you know, for me, I remember that game. I remember that Bat Sports game because, again, we're 2-0 down and came in, and I played in the three quite a lot in my career. I don't know if my style just suited that. But yeah, I enjoyed it, and you know, more than anything, you know, I had people like Johnny Myatt that, you know, he sort of brought me under his wing a little bit, and used to take me out and about with him on a Saturday night as well. So
one or two beers.
There was a few would be that liked to drink in there as well. I said to Mark Harris, when I spoke to Mark yesterday, I said, I used to like sitting next to Michael Harney, because Mike used to like a few beers, but he used to carry the smell of it on him. And if I sat next to him, you couldn't smell that I'd had a couple.
See the things that come out.
That's brilliant, isn't it? All will be revealed.
Michael Harney actually owes... because his father played for Bromley as well. So he's the only father and son what have played for Bromley.
That's an accolade.
Well, I've got one coming through, so you never know, Roy.
That's
it.
But yeah, I'm working on him.
Absolutely.
So there's all the scores of that season.
Oh, brilliant.
I actually played a Vets game, and Michael Harney was referee. He was awful.
Was he?
Stick to playing,
Both referees are awful, aren't they?
Says a lot about
you. Bobby, actually, just as we come to the... This has been so enjoyable. We could go on all day here. But yourself and a few others are actually coming along to the game on Saturday, aren't you?
Yeah, so, you know, we're really grateful for Bromley having us and hosting us on Saturday. The plans are for us to obviously come out and obviously spend some time around the club, seeing everybody, you know, and also meeting each other, because we haven't seen each other for such a long time. But also just obviously seeing the fans and everything. That's, you know, we're happy to be back, really, to be honest with you. And, you know, halftime parade with the club, and just talk around some of the experiences we had during this time. So those that perhaps don't get to see this podcast per se, they'll definitely be able to see us in the flesh at the game at Altrincham on Saturday.
We're really looking forward to it. We really, really are. Roy, just before we finish, how's it been seeing these three again?
Brilliant, brilliant. Yeah, I mean, I've seen Fines around at times and all that, but yeah, as you're saying, you know, little things, and that was a big cup to win. It was huge, because it's a huge cup, that is. I think it's 1885 it goes back to. So it's a long time. But them little seeds of them progression, and then Jerry was here, and he was the start of this massive push. And now our new chairman, Robin, has taken it on even further. We could never have dreamed of this. Years ago, you'd probably been locked up for it.
That's right.
Earlier on, Vinesy, I got asked what my thoughts were of Stuart as a manager. What was your thoughts of Stuart back then?
Well, I'd come from Cray Wanderers at the time, and I was quite inexperienced in the game, I suppose. I'd been playing like lower level. I thought, what grasped me with him, his seriousness. He was deadly serious about it. He was really passionate about it. And that sort of seeped out of him. Every training session, you know, every match day, I thought he was fair. I didn't feel like he had favourites. I didn't feel like your name carried any weight with him. I think he made decisions based on your form. That was my opinion. I think sometimes he joined in training too much, and he used to wear those,
it's interesting you say
and
that
he used to wear those little shorts. That's my
even in the cold.
I kid you not, we did not talk about this before.
No, we haven't spoken about it at all.
This isn't scripted.
Did you say the same thing?
I said the same thing.
Yeah,
I said, you know, for me, he had everybody on their toes. I didn't think anybody, although there were a few mainstays in the team, I didn't think anybody felt that their position was safe if you weren't playing well.
I used to hold, I did something for a long time. I used to hold my breath when the team was being, when the team was being read out, or, you know, today in goal, and I'd hold my breath until I heard my name. I never felt comfortable that I was going to be picked, even when I was playing really, really well. So it says a lot about you. It's a bit scary.
I think the group of players created that for me, allowed me to do that. You know, it wasn't a case of I'm deliberately making players feel edgy. I think I could have picked four at the back, three at the back, there was a togetherness and a flexibility in that group of players. I mean, you talk about Gary Drewitt. You could move Gary up to striker, or you could put him on the left. You could put Bobby on the left, to be fair. They would play the game exactly as you wanted them to play it. It was fantastic.
It wasn't a fear culture. It was just you as a player, you wanted to play. You know, you knew we had a good side. You just wanted to be starting. So it was always like, please, and I just want to be starting, you know, because it's that determination. And Stuart used to ask me all the time. He used to say to me, Bobby, are you ready? I'll kid you not, every time one of my former teammates call me to see how I am, they say that to me.
There you go.
Lasting legacy.
Yeah.
You know. I've got to ask you, Stuart, was you at that game at Worthing where two players of the same name got sent off?
No, I don't remember.
Danny
that.
Smith, was it?
I recall, my memory's not great, but I do recall something like that happened.
I mentioned it in a podcast a few weeks ago.
Oh, wow.
And William Hill, the bookmaker, said for two players of the same name to get sent off in a match was 10,000 to 1.
Oh, really? I remember one game.
They never met Dan Smith, though, did they?
Yeah, that's right. I remember one game at Worthing, and it was pouring rain at the start of the game, and it rained all the way to half time. And we were 2-0 up, and the referee came out and he said, I'm abandoning the game. And I said, why? Nothing's changed. The pitch is exactly the same condition as it was at the start of the game. And he said, one of the linesmen says he can't run up and down the side of the pitch safely. And I thought, somebody's got to him, right? Mm. And we tried to come. The game did get abandoned. We tried to complain. They were having none of it. So a couple of weeks later, we went back down there and we battered them in the rearranged game, which they didn't expect. They thought they would beat us. But we had a toughness in that side. You know, there was a lot of players that were ready for the fight is probably the best way I could describe it. You know, whatever came at us, it wouldn't be perfect every time, but they would be ready to fight, you know. And that was a pleasure. I'm quite interested to hear, though, both the boys talking about me on the training pitch, because when I signed Dean Forbes, not long after I'd signed him, he pulled me aside and he said, you can't do that on a training pitch. You can't keep doing that to young players, you know, because I would show them things. And he said, they can't do that yet, right? Mm. So you're 40, right? And you can still do it. You need to find a different way. So I had to take players and coach them little drills, little things on a one-to-one. Then when we were doing sessions, I would go, right, do this and make sure it was done by a player in the group. And it was a learning thing for me too. Yeah. And I then wore trousers as well. Yeah. Because I was standing about more.
Yeah, I think it was more worried about the shorts than anything.
Gents, it has been an absolute honour to welcome you back. You are always welcome here. Thank you so much for joining us today and for everything you did for Bromley Football Club. And Roy, I'm sure you'll echo those thoughts. A very special Roy Remembers section of the podcast today. Yeah. And certainly my favourite one to date.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good. Yeah. And it's great having players back here from years ago. And that's what I like with George. He brings back the old players back from that time as well. And it's nice to meet them as well. It brings back all those memories.
Thank you all for having us so much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you. Andy Woodman, welcome back to Ravens Weekly. It feels like it's been a while since we've sat down here, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been a little few weeks, hasn't it?
Yeah,
since
it?
We've actually been on here. I don't think much has gone on, has it?
Not too much. Anyway, let's get started with that.
Hang on.
There we go. Little headphone emergency.
Apologies.
We're all good. Let's get started then with that FA Trophy victory at home to Slough Town. Ryan Jones, it was, with the goal in the first 30 seconds. That's pretty much all that happened, wasn't it?
I think that's all we need to talk about. Other than that, it was a horrific game. I mean, it was windy. It was horrible. Let's move on. 1-0. Great goal by Ryan Jones. Great move. Pure football.
It was, wasn't it? moving on to the Monday, we were drawn at home to Chippenham Town, another side from the National League South who will no doubt come up and give us a test.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't know too much about Chippenham. We'll be looking at them and taking them very seriously, because you have to, and worry about that sort of like the week leading into that game. But, listen, they'll be coming here wanting to beat us, and that's the fact of any team from a lower level going up against a team league above. So we'll pay them as much respect as any other team we're playing.
Moving on then, and it was quite a busy week player-wise. We had two players coming through the door, the first of which was Miles Weston, and a player with great experience, one that you were really pleased to get into the building.
Yeah, I felt Miles... I didn't think we'd get Miles, to be honest. He's a player I've always admired. He's obviously the tail end of his career in the nicest sense, as in he's, you know, an older player for our squad. But I felt it was what we needed a little bit of, you know, we play a lot of youngsters, and I just felt that we needed a little bit of a wiry old fox in there as well, and someone that's got a bit of quality, is, you know, to add to the group. And he's done that. He's come in. He looked okay Saturday. You know, listen, I've been on the back of many where he's ripped our team apart. So we know he's fit. He's a good player. And I think he'll add to us in those wide areas for sure.
One thing that struck me when he came in was he said within an hour of being here that he was blown away by the people, yourself and the management team, the players, the staff away from that, you know, the staff in the office and the facilities, which is high praise coming from a player that has played across the football leagues for his whole career.
Yeah, and I think that's the word getting out there to other players in the league and the league above and the league below, you know, that they want to come here, because I think we do things properly. We are a professional football club, and we've got good people, you know, from one side of the building where it's all the office marketing and the people that do the hard yards to make sure we can get the team out on the pitch. And we've got the coaching staff and the people this side of the building. And we all kind of work to one. And that's my sort of one team sort of mentality, where we're all on the same page. And credit to everyone, really, at the club. You know, we're all singing from the same song sheet, and I want to keep it like that.
Fast forward a few days, and another body is in the building, and that is in the form of 20-goal striker Levi Amanchi, who joined from Maidstone United, and another one that's a big coup for the club.
Yeah, Levi's a good 6'4" centre-forward. He's not just a target man, though, and he's not just a brute that you can get balls in the box to. He can do that, but he can play as well. Watched him numerous times, like him, like the way he goes about his business on the pitch. And then upon meeting him, you know, I'm even more happier. He's a real humble young man that wants to do well. We had 48 hours of ups and downs, Matt, as you know, trying to get it done. And we did, and we beat a lot of competition to that signing, you know, a lot of competition, a lot of, you know, bigger clubs than us. So in the nicest respect, and Levi wanted to come to us, and that meant everything to me. And, looking at him now, he's in there, and he's already, can see he's sort of, you know, falling into the group straight away, and we're getting fit and getting ready to go.
It is a really welcoming group, isn't it? And there's such a tight, close bond between these players. It's remarkable.
Yeah, and I think we take a bit of credit for that, really, because we have a policy that we don't have idiots, you know, or people not going to buy into it. And the minute I feel like they're not buying into anything that I want with my team, or they're going to upset the group in any way, I will just get rid of them. And that's fact. And I've done that before. Don't think it'd be rocket science to see where I've done that in the past. And I'll continue to do that, because no one player is bigger than the group. No one player is bigger than the football club. And that's the most important thing, the football club. So they have to buy into everything we're doing. And you see in there, we've got such a great bunch of lads that really buy into everything we do. Some good, some bad that we do, and some things I push them a bit too hard, but they moan, but they moan in the right way. But they do everything for the good of this football club, on and off the pitch, and that's really important, I think, when we're trying to build something here.
Great news in terms of the players coming in, but just before that Slough game that we talked about earlier, we were rocked by the news that Deji Olarewaye was recalled to Charlton Athletic with immediate effect, which was difficult timing, I guess.
Yes, but I think we've got to expect, when we have any lone player, that they're going to be called back. You know, we've got other lone players, they might get called back. We have to be ready to react on that. And as Deji goes back, you know, we were lucky enough that Kirky from Arsenal becomes fit again. So that worked out quite well. I mean, it wasn't that long ago, everyone was saying, how many centre-halves do you need? And all of a sudden, Chin gets injured, Deji goes back, and we're down to the bare bones again. So it's very important. And the one thing I've learned this season is you need to have a big squad or a bigger squad than we've had in the past. And the chairman has been on the same page with me of that. He's kind of recognised that that's really important. So we've been able to work things in the right way and make sure we've got replacements. But Deji's a loss. He's a great lad. I'm sure we'll see him down there at some stage in some capacity. So we'll wish Deji all the best. And you never know, he might turn up one day.
And sandwiched in between all of this stuff we're talking about was the trip to Southend on Saturday the 16th. And it's fair to say it was quite an eventful one.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, I'm still getting stick about it now. I don't know what I did.
You made a lot of friends.
Yeah, I mean, look, we won the football match. It's not my fault that they haven't got players on the bench and all of that. And I sympathise with all of that, but that's not really my business. I'm not going to comment on that. And then I get some mention of winning Manager of the Week, which I've never known anything like that. And then I'm still getting stick. I mean, come on, Southend fans. It's not me that picks it, and it's not me that's really that bothered about it. So, and I do feel your pain and your plight for your club. I'm not that soulless or that stupid or that naive. But this is football fans. And this one other thing that struck me in the week is that football fans are allowed to really scream anything they want at you. And the minute you say something back or one message back, they go crazy, don't they? And I kind of think, well, hang on a minute. And I haven't done that, by the way. Let me make it clear. But I've seen other managers do that this week. And I think, what, we're not allowed to say nothing. We have to stand there and take it. And it's a weird world we're in. But look, it's all in good spirits. And Southend are a big club and a good club. And they'll you know, hopefully their troubles change in time. Again, that's not my business. I had to do a job, and that was to win a football match. And some of them not even happy how I won it, but we won it, and that's all that matters, really. That would just be in the history books now, that game. We've moved on, and like I say, we'll just keep taking care of our business. And I mean that with respect to Southend fans and Southend people and anyone else down in Southend. This is not aimed at you in any way, shape or form. It never has been. And we'll continue to keep concentrating on what we do. The other thing I must just add on that, people are getting a bit umpty about these pictures we're taking. They think we're aimed at their club. We're not. It's a little in-house thing we do amongst ourselves with our supporters. So, again, I can see all the comments about people, this lot, no, it's nothing to do with you lot. We're not aiming anything at your club or anyone else's club, because not just Southend, I've seen other clubs say that. It's a little something we've done in-house as a club with our staff, with our team of people here and our own fan base, just to sort of show them that we're happy. So I mean, they still put posts and say we're rubbish and this and that, but it's not aimed at anybody. I promise you that. Everyone's got to just relax a little bit.
Indeed. Anyway, looking at that game, obviously coming out with a victory, there was one main change to the starting 11. That was Cole Pukawa coming back in following his loan at Oxford City. How did you feel he did?
Excuse me. Yeah, Cole did okay. I thought he did okay for his first game back. I've got no problems with Cole. We want him to go out and get games, so he's up to speed in case we needed to call him back, and that's what happened. He'll be involved now to the end of the season, and whether it's in the team, out the team, you know, we'll have to cross that bridge when we come to it. But you know, it's very important that Cole, Webby, Louis, Cheeky, whoever it is, whatever player's out on that pitch, it's very important that they know that they're not replaceable and there's not someone else that can come in and play their position. And that's not saying those names in particular, I'm just using those as examples, because we have to have a squad that's hungry to keep their shirt and not let anyone else take their shirt. And that's what we've had, and that's what I've got to keep maintaining at this football club, that it's competition for places. Competition for places drives success, and that's what we'll do. And that's, you know, if you've got no competition for your place, you get complacent and it doesn't drive success. So that's what I've tried to create here, and we've got that in abundance. And the ones that are not playing, you know, your Vennings and your Ryan Jones, who've not been involved, and others, you know, they've really been waiting and chomping at the bit. The Kiddos, they've been chomping at the bit, waiting to get their chance. And that's what we want. Training's high, levels are high, and performances are higher.
We're getting to that stage now in December where we've played teams twice. Altrincham are another one of those. And it's going to be a game on Saturday of two sides who have had a great start to the season and a great first half of the season so far.
Yeah. Again, I remind everyone and the players and everyone around the place, we haven't achieved anything. Let's not get carried away. We're halfway through. Yeah, well done. Move on. We've got to keep working and concentrating on what we do. Altrincham are a fantastic team with a fantastic manager and fantastic players, and it'll be a really tough game. It always is with them. The margins are very fine. So, you know, we went up there. Listen, I'm not stupid enough to say we could have quite easily lost that, but our goalkeeper made a couple of unbelievable saves and we got the winning goal. So it'll be a tight affair, and I'm sure they'll have a lot of the ball, like Altrincham do. Park that to the side with respect and all of that. We don't worry about it too much. Just worry about what we're doing. And I keep sort of reiterating that, you know, with all the noise from after the South End and every other game, all the noise that comes with every other performance, we're rubbish. We don't, you know, they can't be their one. They're a rubbish team. Just worry about us. And we take care of what we do here. And I think that's a really important message with my players, with me, that we just keep concentrating on what we're doing and what we're doing well. And we've got to just keep pushing for the second half of the season, because this is the business end now. So the first half was the warm-up. Now we're at the business end of the season, going into January.
And again, it's on TV, 5:30 kick-off. Didn't have a single home game on TV last year. We've now had four in the first half of the season, which I guess is testament to how things are going on the pitch and the club as a whole.
No. It's to do with Wrexham and Notts County not being in the league. Mainly Wrexham. Let's not make any bones about it. It's got nothing to do with how we're doing. We don't get mentioned or anything. It's because Wrexham have gone and the TV have realised there's 20 other teams in the league. And they think they might just come down to us once in a while. But yeah, we're on TV. I think it's nice. If it's nice for the area, it's nice for the club, it's nice for the players. For me, it's a game, a football that we've got to win, and we've got to play to our strengths to win the game and do what we do best. And yeah, like I say, I'm not buying into that. It's because we're second in the league. It's nothing to do with that. It's because Wrexham are not in the league no more. It was all about Wrexham and Notts County last year. I'm surprised Chesterfield ain't on every week now.
As we come to the end of 2023, the support this year and particularly this season has just got even better and better and better, hasn't it? And there's a loyal group of people that follow the team home and away, and it's a growing group, and it's clear to see that yourself and the players really appreciate them.
Now there's a lot of them, and that's grown. I mean, it must have grown from, and I'm saying this, you know, there used to be 30, 40 maybe go away from home, which I respected. Now we've got a group of fans that are following us everywhere, and I'm talking lengths of the country. So it was brilliant. I'm so chuffed. I'm so chuffed that the club's growing in that capacity where we've now got people who want to come and follow us. We've now got a fan base, a hardcore that want to follow us, and we've got a hardcore at home. So we're growing and the fans are growing with us, and it's really nice. And I've got so much respect for any fan that goes up the country and down the country, spends their money, supports their team. It's brilliant. And I can't thank ours enough, whether it's, you know, 50, 60, 70, 100, or the other week, I think it was 250, 300. It's brilliant. And if we can keep growing that and growing them at home, it's going to help us. It's going to help us as a club, help us as a team. And it's going to help the community to have I'll keep on about this community football club we've got. We've got to make sure we keep growing this brand. So if anyone's out there and they got nothing on this weekend and they want to bring a friend down, come down. It's massive to us to have you here. And we'll try to do our bit on the pitch. And hopefully we can keep growing this fan base and keep getting up to that sort of like the levels that we feel that this club should be at.
Andy, thanks again for your time. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Just a few things more then before we finish for 2023. Mm. Wow, going to miss it next week.
It's been a good year, hasn't it?
It has. It's been a great year. And thank you to everyone who has received Ravens Weekly so well and all the lovely feedback and constructive feedback that you've given us about the podcast. We really appreciate it. It's genuinely the highlight of my week sitting here doing this. We absolutely love it. We try and cram it in. I've got to be honest, we try and cram it in. We're both very busy people, but we find the time to do it and to bring you what we hope is an interesting listen. And thank you all again for your wonderful feedback throughout the year. We can't wait to be back with you in 2024 and bring you hopefully lots more good news as the football season goes on, both on and off the pitch. Talking of off the pitch, we had our Christmas party last Friday night, which was a huge success, and what a fantastic night it was in Broomfield's Bar and Kitchen. Lots of laughter, lots of dancing, lots of brilliant music, and the singer was fantastic as well. So a huge thank you to everyone who attended that, and a big well done to the events and Broomfield's team who organised that. Mick, Harriet, Max, and the rest of the team that put a lot of hours into putting that together. Will, with the food as well. Absolutely fantastic effort from everybody in Team Bromley concerned with that, and huge well done to them. It was a really enjoyable evening, and well done to Josh, who was on the photo booth, which was good. I couldn't resist but going there, in all honesty, and get a couple of Christmas photos. But thank you to everyone who attended. It was so good that the date has already been confirmed for 2024. So if you want to get your bookings in early, people have already booked. So make sure you don't miss out. People are already booking up for 2024. It will be taking place on Friday, the 20th of December, 2024. And ticket prices will be around the same kind of region that they were this year, which was £15. Huge thank you once again to everyone who attended. In terms of other events, we've got a Burns Night event coming up in the venue suite here at the Relocatum Community Stadium. That is going to be held on Friday, the 26th of January, 2024, as I say, in the venue suite, and that will start at 6:30. You can find out more information about what's going to happen on that night through our website, bromleyfc.co.uk. And I just wanted to finish, after all of our fantastic guests and everyone have been on quite a heartwarming note, and that is something that we try and do every Christmas here, and we've certainly done it for the past couple of years. We've taken the entire squad, usually in two separate halves, down to the Princess Royal University Hospital, which that place has a great deal of meaning for me personally, for reasons I won't go into on here, but a place that a lot of people hold in their heart. I know that sounds funny being a hospital, but there are some wonderful people that work there doing amazing things and doing a fantastic job, and people that are often underappreciated. So we take it upon ourselves to take all the players down for visits to visit the children's ward. And I just want to say a huge thank you to the squad who have received this so well. Byron Webster, the captain, rallying the troops. All of the players really keen, especially the new signings as well, just want to get involved and get stuck in with the community stuff. All going down to the hospital, donating presents, which were given to us and donated to us by the Bromley Children and Families from. Huge thank you to them for donating those, spreading some festive cheer on the ward and giving out these presents. And it really is heartwarming. It makes the players realise how lucky they are to be at home with their families on Christmas Day, as sadly some of these children will be spending the Christmas Day in hospital, which is, of course, not nice at all. But a huge thank you to Sophie, to Jade, and to all the Georgiana, all the team at the children's ward, who have been absolutely fantastic, and really appreciate the link that we've got going on there. Josh, it was it's always quite an emotional visit, isn't it? You've done it a couple of years now in a row. It's heartwarming, really, the impact that these players can have.
Yeah, it's brilliant. It's probably one of the highlights of the year, I think. It's really good initiative from the Community Trust to arrange stuff like that. And yeah, I think, obviously, I can't speak on behalf of the players, but I think being in this environment, you can get carried away with, you know, football life and whatever. So it's good to sort of, you know, see that people are, you know, going through what they're going through, and especially at this time of year as well. And you know, the reactions on the kids' faces and the parents as well. I think it was. Yeah, it was really good.
We had one particular lad that was about to go into an operation, and he specifically asked before he went into his operation, can some of the players come and see me? And so Byron Webster and Lewis Lee went down to see him just before his operation and you know, gave him some words of wisdom as to, you know, how to be brave and so on and so forth. And it was truly wonderful to see. And you see the human side coming out. Yeah. You know, these guys are humans.
He went to a game as well, I think.
I think he did, yeah. Do you know what, though? And that's another comment that I'd like to make, is we're going into these wards and visiting these lovely people. Everyone knows who Bromley are now. You know, a few years back we'd do it and, oh, you know, are you Crystal Palace or whoever? you know, everyone knows, oh, you know, great season. The parents were saying, how you, where do you think you're going to finish? All of that stuff. Some of the kids knew the players as well, which was wonderful to see. And obviously you don't want to see anyone in hospital at all, you know, especially not at Christmas. But for these guys to be able to go in, and we're going to have members of the women's team joining us for the next visit as well. These guys and girls to go in and, you know, make this impact is truly special. And thank you to everyone who's made that possible. And Josh, you captured it so well. And I know the photos and some bits about that are going to be going out online in the coming days. Josh, I think that's us for the year.
Boom.
Christmas special over and out. Thank you so much to everyone who's tuned in, put a comment on, listened to us, engaged with us, caught us at home fixture and told us either how good or how bad the podcast is. Thank you so much. It means the world to us, and we hope to be entertaining you more in 2024 as we enjoy doing it so much. Josh, thank you for joining me throughout this year.
Thank you,
being an excellent co-host. And thank you from me as well to all of you and the wider Bromley FC family. We'll be back in 2024. Thanks and goodbye till then. What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me, and that's the town.